Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Had to show the lungs on that one. Fellas, ladies, everyone. Talking with TD is back this week. Divisional playoff round. I'm excited. I know each of you are excited. And guess what, folks? I have my right, well, in this case, my left hand, because he's to my left side. I have my left hand man back in the, man, the last time I talked to you, you weren't a graduate, but you are now. Hallelujah.
Times are a changing, Teron. I'm all grown up now.
You're all grown up. You say, I'm a grown man now. I'm grown. That's right. We have an excellent show for you today. We're going to break it down. That touchdown that Anthony Sticky Fingers Firkser had against the Patriots to open things up. He's going to stop by and break that down. We have a triple play for you. That's right. Not the first, not only the second, or the third. We have all three downs of that goal line stand with the master cutter, Rashawn Evans. And we have plenty of content for you from Dean Pease, from John Harbaugh, from Coach Vrabel, from Kenny Vaccaro. There are multiple quotes here. This is what we do, folks. You know where to go when you want to know what is going on. We are here talking with TD. And look, we're going to kick things off on the offensive side of things. Why? Well, because some guy named Derrick Henry had an amazing day. They rode Derrick to 182 yards rushing, 34 carries, a touchdown. He had the screen to set up his touchdown run. This guy just played outstanding football. And I tell you what, there is a lot to be said for Derrick Henry being able to just carry this team. And I tell you, it's so funny, right? It's so funny. I was standing in the tunnel and before the guys came out and all these fans that just kept saying, we want Derrick. Where's Henry? We want Derrick. I have one thing to say. Be careful what you ask for. Because they got Derrick times the thousandth power, man. 34 carries, and I tell you, Calvin, what was really interesting to me is the way this whole game planned out, right? It played out. It was just according to plan. You win the coin toss. You defer. You know you're going to get the ball in the third quarter. You keep the game close. You close it out in the second half. The second quarter. What did they do? You saw a steady dose. 5 carries by Derrick Henry, a screen pass. The next thing you know, you're leading, and you have a lead going into halftime. Oh, you're getting the ball back. Now, they didn't score, you know, when they got the ball back, and the game just remained close. But the fact of the matter is it played right into the hands of what the Titans wanted to do. I'm going to tell you this. When Derrick Henry punched the ball in the end zone, boy, oh, boy, Gillette Stadium was cut. Look, I could have heard a mouse crawling through one of the eating peanuts or something in the stands. I mean, it was very quiet there, and that's exactly what you want to do. You want to shut down the crowd when you're going into a volatile environment. I actually talked to Roger Saffold today about that, and I asked him about when he used to go into Seattle with the Rams, you know, and they would unleash Todd Gurley, and that's what he said. You run the football, you just take it away, and they just feed off of that. So there's definitely a value to running the football, and it's funny, we got to talk to Coach Harbaugh, John Harbaugh, the Ravens head coach. And we got to talk to him, and I think it was Joe Rexroad, had an excellent question. And I tipped my cap to Rexroad because he asked a question on something that's near and dear to my heart. Calvin, you know this. Even though I'm a former wide receiver, I love seeing the football being ran. And, you know, I love when they run the football. So here's what John Harbaugh had to say about running the football. I think he loves it, too.
We read a lot last year how that, you know, the run game was over, you know, in football. Just 1 year later, it turns out not to be true.
That's really the bottom line. That's the bottom line. It's not true. And you look at the teams that are left, for the most part, these are teams that are really good at running the football, are the 49ers. The Vikings have, you know, Dalvin Cook, and they do their thing there. We know what's up in this game. Even the Texans, even though their offensive line is subpar, they still run the football. Carlos Hyde has done some good things. The Chiefs, I mean, you got a machine gun in the backfield like Patrick Mahomes. You don't have to run the ball. You know, so I give the Chiefs a mulligan, but I think, not to get too far ahead of myself, but I think if the Titans have to go to Kansas City, I think they beat their behind because of that running the football and that what they bring to the table. But we're going to focus on this week that we have. And before we do that, I just want to continue to discuss a little bit about this game against the Patriots, because we would be remiss if we didn't look back on it. And one of the other things that I thought was really good was Ryan Tannehill. He managed the game. And I get it, right? He was playing outstanding football, 117 QBR, and just, you know, throwing the ball all over the place and throwing a bunch of touchdown passes and everything like that. This game plan was to have him become even more of a game manager and rely on Derrick Henry. But when there were throws that needed to be made, he made them. That catch, the catch and pitch and throw to Anthony Firkser on the third down to kind of seal the deal, that was huge. And that's the thing that I think is developing with Tannehill, to where you could have him be that game manager, but when you need him to make a play and come through, he's going to come through in the clutch. Before that one of their two touchdowns was a throw to Anthony Firkser, and I give Tannehill a lot of credit, because the Patriots, they used that because they blitzed. It was a zero blitz. And Tannehill stared. I think it was either McCourty or Daron Harmon. It may have been Daron Harmon. But he stared him down and delivered that ball into that tight window. He knew he was going to be hit. But like he told me back after the Raiders game, I'll take a big hit for a 91-yard touchdown anytime. This one wasn't 91 yards, but it counted just the same for 7 points. And what he had to do was trust Anthony Firkser to be where he needed to be, and, of course, to make the catch. I wanted to break this one down with Sticky Fingers, so I pulled him aside in the locker room, and we got to talk about this. And, by the way, we're going to have Firkser on the Chase and TD show as well, so you're going to get a double dose of Sticky Fingers. So check out what Firkser had to say as he broke down the touchdown.
Yeah, like a switch release. I see my man coming to me, and then I just knew I had to kind of get some separation somehow with man, and I was able to slip him inside. And the O-line and Deion picked up the blitz perfectly, just gave him enough time, and Ryan made a great throw. I just had to finish the catch.
You know, the thing I like about that is your release, because it seems like you purposely widened the defender so you could have that space to come back in.
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah, I knew I tried to kind of sell it out or sell that and then give myself space, to give myself room to make the catch. Keep the spacing with the other receiver.
Now, I've been on record saying I feel you have the best hands on this team, but I want to talk about your route running, because I think that's something that's pretty outstanding. How did that develop? Where did that come from?
I think a lot of it stemmed from, high school and college. I mean, I played receiver in high school and kind of like a move H-back type in college. So, I had a good receivers coach who played at Nevada in high school, I think, which taught me a lot of good, like, foundation. And I think a combination of, like, playing basketball and as well as hockey growing up, and it gave me some more, like, lateral type of quickness that I could use, like, to my advantage in some types of routes.
That's interesting that you mentioned hockey, because I know the lateral is something that everyone says about basketball, but specifically with hockey, what have you?
Yeah, similar to hockey, too, because you're kind of pushing off side to side. Mm-hmm. So it gave me that kind of just, like, natural, like, instinct of, like, kind of using those types of muscles to kind of, navigate my way.
Gotcha. Now, how about Coach Downing? You know, we see him doing a lot of work with you guys.
Yeah.
How much has what he's worked with you guys kind of transferred to the football field?
Yeah, Coach Downing has, like, a great perspective of, like, the whole, like, coverage structures and kind of like offensive game planning and stuff like that. So he's helped me a ton with like kind of understanding defense, understanding leverage, and kind of using my type of skill set to get open. And yeah, he's done a great job helping us all that way.
And then last thing, just to circle back to what we started with, Tannehill said he had to trust you to make a play in this situation. What, in your opinion, has been the key to you and him developing that level of trust?
Yeah, I think it's just all the reps we've had through OTAs, through preseason, through the regular season now, just kind of working as much as we can on trusting each other. And I just know that, I mean, every time I'm running around, I'm trying to get open and make sure I give him an outlet. So that's all I can do, help him out.
Cool, thanks.
So that's Anthony Firkser breaking it on down. And that's the thing, man, that route he ran, he did a really good job of opening things up to give himself space, or actually to give Tannehill space to fit the ball into that tighter window. And shout out to Firkser and Tannehill on that connection. Now, let's spin it forward to the Ravens, right? And when you look at this Ravens team, man, oh, man, are they good. They are really good in all phases. But what we're going to do in this case is focus on the defense. And I think a similar formula should be in order where it's just run, Derek, run. And here's the thing. When you have guys up front, right, they have Brandon Williams. Listen, Brandon Williams is an ox. That dude is strong. And he's someone that could easily two-gap. He could bump inside and be a nose guard if you wanted him to, but they got him at a D-tackle. He's playing kind of like a three technique. And then you have the zero tech in Michael Pierce. Listen. He's a presence in the middle. And Chris Wormsley is no slouch also. So their guys up front, they present some issues. It's a lot harder to run on them on to the inside, you know, to bang it between the tackles. But guess what? That plays to what the Titans want to do. They want to get Derrick Henry out there in the alley. Arthur Smith, I sound like a broken record, but he has continuously done an excellent job of finding ways to get Derrick Henry in the alley. And I actually did a breakdown on that one. It's on Twitter, so you could check that out on one of the ways that they use motion, a series of motions to set things up to get Derrick Henry and the guard pulling into the boundary. So that's something that you should expect. Why should you expect that this week? Look, if you want a little homework, TD is giving you a homework assignment, okay? If you want to look at some X and O's, hopefully you have a subscription to Game Pass. If you don't, you definitely need to get that. And if you do have it, go and watch the game, the first Browns and Ravens game. That will show you some of the things that they did as far as, I mean, there were times where they pulled two guys and they just blew everybody up, and Nick Chubb got a nice big game. There were times where, you know, they worked the pin and pull to get Chubb outside. Long story short, Nick Chubb, he broke an 88-yarder on that one. And they used the tight end as a lead guy in different areas to open up a seam, as well as just, you know, unique blocks where you had the tackle block down and the guard go up and blow out the linebacker. And the tight end led the way, so it's literally an escort. You know what I mean? It's an escort to daylight, and Nick Chubb did the rest. They can have the football pushed down the field against them via the run. That's a big thing. And then if you want a little bit more to look at, go to week 13, 49ers and Ravens. Kyle Shanahan, he devised ways to get his guys. Raheem Mostert, it was his turn. He had an outstanding game. That guy was hitting the outside over and over and over again. And that's what you have to do. And if you look at the Ravens, right, their losses, teams ran the football pretty well, right? I think it was the Chiefs. They had a buck something in one of them. And then the Browns, they just ran the ball all over. The 49ers, that game was close. But this is where the third aspect of having the full formula, the three phases, comes into play. Justin Tucker hit a 50-yarder with the seconds running out, and they won the game. So this team, like I said, they're complete. You have to run the football against them. But at the same time, you can't just run, 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 and run, right? You're going to have to pass the ball. And here's the thing that is interesting about that secondary. They are chock full of guys who are high quality cover corners. Marcus Peters, Jimmy Smith, Marlon Humphrey, Brandon Carr is solid. And then if you want to match up against a tight end, they could do so with Earl Thomas. But a lot of times they have him in that single post and he's just playing traffic cop. So that secondary is tough. And when you have guys that could cover like that, you could go man, zero blitz is something that's easy to dial up because you could trust the coverage behind it. That's something I wanted to ask Ryan Tannehill about when we got to speak to him. And he made some pretty good points about how that will give you opportunities to get yards after the catch. When he said that, naturally, I thought of the yak monster and A.J. Brown. But let's check out what Tannehill had to say.
Well, you know, they bring a lot of zero pressure. So when they do that, they got one more that you can block, and the guys have to get open quickly. So that'll be a challenge for us is to take advantage of those man situations. You know, if we get a catch and run, break one tackle, and it's a touchdown. So I know we have guys that can do that, and just have to be clean. Be clean up front with our rules and who's blocking who, and then on the outside, just have to be able to get open and get the ball out.
And what about a guy like Earl Thomas as a post safety? What does he bring to the table?
He's a veteran guy. He's played a lot of football. I have a ton of respect for him. He moves around all over the place. You know, he'll play low, he'll play high, he'll pressure. You know, he really does a lot for him, moving all over the place. So a guy we have a lot of respect for and are going to have to account for it.
There you have it, Earl Thomas, you know, one of the best safeties who just happened to train. I talked to Vaccaro, and he said he's looking forward to meeting up with the former Texas alum, you know, his fellow Texas alum, rather. He trained with Kevin Byard and Vaccaro down there in Austin. Landon Collins was there, too. Derwin James. There's a post on that on ESPN.com because you know what we do. We tried it. We worked to cover it all. By the way, speaking of which, there's a post on ESPN.com about the Music City Miracle. Got to talk to a bunch of guys about that. So do your man a solid and go ahead and check that out as well. But getting back to this Ravens secondary, Marcus Peters. I remember when he came out of Washington, he was one of my favorite prospects. I just fell in love with watching this guy's game. I loved his ball skills. I loved his aggressiveness. Obviously, he had the issue with the coaching staff, and he got dismissed. But here's the thing to speak to his character. He still texts guys like Sidney Jones. They actually had John Ross, believe it or not, play corner a little bit, right, that year, dead serious. And Marcus Peters was in touch with all the guys, making sure that, you know, they were on point with the game plan, right? And that says a lot about his character. But here's the thing. He is a guy that is very aggressive as a corner. And he is someone that makes his living off of jumping routes. It's the way he's always been. He is very susceptible to double moves. So I think what you need to do is show that slant a couple times. It's on tape, right? That's one of the things that A.J. Brown has continuously done well. That's on tape. Show it to him in person. Introduce him to that in person a couple times. And I guarantee you, after you do that, he's going to jump it. Do it out of play action so that way you get all the protection you need. Because remember, this is a team that likes to blitz. So when they do go zero, you got to hope that you keep everybody from getting home. A.J. Brown, get off the ball, into your route, hit that slant, stick your foot in the ground, explode up the field. Right in sync with the pump fake from Ryan Tannehill, and that could be a big play. That's why I feel it's good for them to work the double move against Marcus Peters. But here's the thing. Marcus Peters brings a swagger. He brings an energy to that Ravens defense, and they've been outstanding since he's gotten there. They've just continued to elevate. He just brought in a lot of energy to that team. I actually, on the conference call, wanted to make sure I asked Coach Harbaugh about that. So let's check out what Harbaugh had to say about the addition of Marcus Peters when I asked him.
Well, I mean, he does have those things. I mean, that's a great observation on your part, and he's also talented. He loves football. He's a sharp guy. He works hard at practice, competes. He's been very coachable. He is very coachable. He's very smart, and you know, he's been a good fit for us. I mean, I think he fits what we try to do defensively. So it's been one of the great in-season moves the teams have made that I can remember.
That says it all. And he's right. It is one of the great in-season moves a team made because they skyrocketed once he became a part of that defense. And, you know, again, that secondary is really good. Now, here's the thing. We talk about the pass rush and the zero blitz that they bring. Let me tell you, Jalen Ferguson, he's a guy, Calvin, if you remember, we were close to having him on. We just had a few different scheduling issues. Why were we going to have him on? Because we knew the Titans had a lot of interest in him. He was actually here in Nashville. He was one of their visits. So rest assured, he's a guy that they were interested in. A lot like Terrell Suggs, in my opinion, as far as the style of play. But he's starting to become a presence. And then you got Matthew Judon. And the thing with Judon that is really interesting is how they use him. A while ago, they used to use Pernell McPhee, right? Guy from Pahokee, Florida. I don't know if you know about the Pahokee, Florida guys, but the way that they used to train, they would get a basket full of rabbits and unleash it in the field, and their job was to chase the rabbits. That's why they called Janoris Jenkins Jackrabbit, by the way. But I'm talking about a big dude that, you know, they used to move him all over the place. He'll play inside. He'll play outside linebacker, middle linebacker. That's what they're starting to do with Matthew Judon. I mentioned that 49ers game. I saw where they had Marlon Humphrey line up essentially as an outside linebacker. You know, they're in sub package. But they took Judon and lined him up at middle linebacker. Humphrey blitzed, and then off of the edge, Judon, he blitzed the interior gap. Now, there was a good blitz pickup, and they ran a nice pivot route with Kendrick Bourne. And he was able, in the pivot route, you run your slant, you stick your foot in the ground, and you wheel back out. And it was a big gain. It was like a 30-yard gain. But why I say that is because this is an example of the creative blitzes that Wink Martindale is a very aggressive defensive coordinator. And like Dean Pease, he says he'll give up the yards, but he's not trying to give up the points. Wink Martindale says, I'm not giving you jack crap. And that's really the deal. So they're going to be very aggressive. I'm looking forward to this matchup. Like I said, I touched on the guys up front. The linebackers, L.J. Fort, and what is his name? Josh Bynes. These guys could run. L.J. Ford especially. He was – I don't know why the Eagles let him go, but they picked him up, and, you know, he signed a deal to be with the Ravens longer. And they are just complete at all levels. But if there's an area that can be attacked, it's to the outside. Why? Because they just – the corners, like, they want to come up and tackle. But if you could get a lineman to the outside and – Get on those DBs, you have a strong shot. And they're, like I said, the linebackers are okay. They're not all pro level, Pro Bowl level, or even really good. They're okay. So, in my opinion, run the football. That's how you win. Also, in my opinion, this podcast is a 5-star podcast. So, what my suggestion would be is to go Talking with TD, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, give it the 5-star rating. And if you don't have tickets to this Ravens game, Tennessee Tickets is your source. They're going to have a tailgate for you there in Baltimore. And even not just the Ravens game, all things here in Tennessee, make sure you check them out, TennesseeTickets.com. No extra fees. We're going to a commercial. We'll be right back.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
Can I live? No one man can stop me. Can I live? No front line can block me. Can I live?
Yeah, back from the break, talking with TD. So we broke down the offense. It's time to turn things to the other side of the football and talk about the defense. We have to look at what this Titans defense did going up there and possibly ending the reign of Tom Brady. You know the other thing that they did? They had the darn emperor over there. He was having a fit. Mike Vrabel, dare I say, outcoached Bill Belichick. It's the truth, folks. But looking at this defense, this is a game. It was 20-13. In all honesty, we're talking about a 14-13 game, right? Until that last play. But one of the things that was just huge in all of this was that goal line stand. And I tell you, look, man, Daquan Jones, I say the name over and over and over again. That man does his job. He got in there, and he was able to occupy blockers, and that allowed Rashawn Evans to get in there. Jeffrey Simmons, too, man. And this is the thing. We talk about Brandon Williams and Michael Pierce in the middle of the Ravens defense. Well, the Titans have a couple of dogs in there too, right? Because Jarrell Casey is no slouch either. But the two big Bears were able to make things happen, and that allowed Rashawn Evans to come in there and make the play. So we didn't just break down one play. We broke down three plays because this was, in my opinion, the most crucial three plays in the game. So let's get Rashawn Evans to talk us through it. Check this out. I know you're going
to
love it.
Yeah, I wanted to go through the three plays in that goal line stand. I know you call yourself Master Cutter, but you know, we might have to change it up to Trigger Man because the way you were triggering on these. So what we got going on?
Really right here, man, Dean Pease called a really good call. Goal line now allowed me to be able to run through and be able to make a big play. I kind of saw the fullback, which I was keen on the whole time. Saw him go over there. You know, the running back was right behind him. He kind of stuttered up a little bit. It gave me just a split second of time. And I just kind of dove for it and took my chances and, you know, got him down.
What about, was that, is that Simmons up front
Simmons,
there?
Yes, sir. He was beasting down there the whole three plays, man. Just, you know, really just moving the guards, moving in the centers, allowing me to be able to run through. Dude does a heck of a job being able to play the cut blocks and all those things. So, I mean, he's making that play possible.
So that was the first play. Here's the second play. Mm-hmm. What do we got here?
So right here, man, they get kind of a more of like a slash play, zone play. I kind of see the back be able to go, try to go outside, get the center to try to work up and try to cut me. Daquan does an amazing job being able to come flat down the line and be able to make a play. And I was just there for just extra support. To help and keep them from getting in the end zone.
Is that kind of how this defense is set up, where you got your guys up front, they make it, well, not make it happen, but they clog things up?
Oh, no doubt. It's either the back is making the play or the D-line, man. It's one of the two. You know, we try to be as aggressive as possible as we can to, you know, allow, you know, other players to be able to make plays. So that's kind of how we do it, kind of complementary football.
Yeah, selfless.
Yeah, selfless.
So this is the last play of that season. Mm-hmm. This was a huge series, by the way.
Man, appreciate that, man. And here we go again, man. Key in the fullback, man. Didn't really expect them to go and run kind of the same play again. The fullback leads up in there. I saw the back. I just really took my chances, ran down here, took my chances, and was able to get him in the backfield. I mean, just the whole D-line, man. I mean, I feel like we got a, like, amazing knot back. I feel like that's what was the key to it, especially with Simmons, Daquan. You got Austin Johnson out there, Harold, center edge. You know, you got KB right there being able to fill in at that spot, so... I mean, just as a whole, man, the whole defense, man, we just had our mindset made up that we wanted a lot of them to score.
So that's Rashawn Evans, and I tell you, it's always fun talking shop with him. As Calvin said, you know, you really just take him to the table, he's going to sit down and eat, man. That's what it boils down to. And you don't even have to tell him, that, like, hey, man, eat up. He's just going to sit down and do what he does. So outstanding series for the Titans defense on that one. They literally – saved the game with that. But in addition to that series, the reason why the game was so close and why they only scored 13 points was also because of what they were able to do against Julian Edelman. Now, granted, Edelman had that run, that jet sweep. I still wonder if Adoree knows where the ball is, because Edelman was in the end zone and Adoree Jackson was still looking around. But Adoree had a solid game. I will give him credit. He had a key pass breakup, and he came up and made some plays as far as tackling. I know that he was not a part of practice on Wednesday. He was out there on Tuesday. We'll continue to monitor that, but he is huge to this team. And why is he huge? He's the only corner they have that can run with Marquise Brown. You know, so that's something you have to be concerned about as a Titans fan, as a Titans coordinator, as a Titans player, etc. You need to be concerned about that, because if you don't have someone who could just gas up and go with Brown on the outside, now all of a sudden that's one more thing that you have to factor in and be concerned about. You had to be concerned about making sure that Kevin Byard, especially when he's in that single post, which is you're going to get those looks because you want everybody down there to make things difficult for that running game, right? The zone read or just Lamar Jackson is a playmaker, period, running the ball. So that makes things a little bit more difficult. Adoree is going to be a big-time factor, whether he's in the game or not. So that's something to make sure we watch. There's also another guy, right, in Jayon Brown, who is definitely something to be concerned about. He's a guy that could run. He could go. He's very solid in coverage. He's solid against the screen. He's just solid overall. He's a player. Obviously, Rashawn Evans is someone. I actually did a play breakdown, and I drew up some of the things that you could do to go against the zone read, go against, you know, just what that offense presents. And key parts of that, one of them was Jayon Brown on the backside scraping and you know, making sure that nothing was available if Lamar Jackson decides to reverse and get out of dodge, right? So that's something. Rashawn Evans was key in that also, where there were times where he will have the opportunity to be a spy on Lamar Jackson. So the linebacking play is going to be huge in this game. I will say this, David Long is a solid player. He did take a bad angle on the screen, and it ended up being, I think it was like an 8-yard gain or so. But the fact of the matter is, David Long, and I talked to him about this when he first got here, he came from the Big 12. So this is a conference where in college he had all kinds of experience playing in space. In essence, that's what this Ravens offense likes to do. They like to get you in space and force you to make a decision. Is it going to be a good one? Is it going to be a bad one? And that's the thing that you're thinking about. And as soon as you hesitate, they're gone. So I think this linebacking core is going to be okay. You obviously hope that Jayon Brown is going to be in the game. He told me coming out of the locker room that his shoulder was good. He was out there yesterday, listed as not practicing, but he was out there. We'll see what happens there. But there's more to it than just that, right? Because you need help from the secondary. Because Mark Andrews is a guy I'm sure the linebackers will get matched up with. You know, they'll have to pick him up. But, you know, Kenny Vaccaro is another factor. And the thing is, when they go 13 personnel, they can make things look like they have two receivers and a tight end, even though they have three tight ends in the game. Why? Because Hayden Hurst, a pitcher, by the way, had the yips, you know what I mean, and he had to switch sports. But he could line up wide, as can Mark Andrews, and then they could just have Nick Boyle be a tight end. This offense causes issues. I would hate to have to prepare for them. Even that's what you heard Vrabel say. They're fun to watch, but not fun to prepare for. So there's a lot that presents, right, the 13 personnel. A guy who's going to be directly impacted by that 13 personnel is Kenny Vaccaro. Always fun to talk to Kenny. So let's hear what he had to say about going against that offense that presents so many issues.
You have three dynamic tight ends. You can spread guys out. You can get 13 personnel, but you're also having 11 personnel looks or 12 personnel looks. So they do a good job of spreading the ball around. Obviously, he likes his tight end, Pro Bowler Mark Andrews. And, you know, Hurst is a speedier tight end. And then Boyle can make some plays, too. He's really good at blocking.
What is it that makes him so good, Andrews, that is, running on that seam route? They connect on that all the time.
He catch radius. I think what makes him good is Lamar trusts him, one. I mean, for a guy to get that amount of targets. And just his catch radius, going high point in the ball.
So the big question coming out of all of this, because the guy distributing the football is Lamar Jackson. So the big question is, what do you do with him? I want to focus on passing the ball because so much attention goes to his ability to make plays running it, rightfully so. But let's not lose track. This guy had 36 touchdowns through the air this regular season. A 6-1 touchdown to interception ratio. Lamar Jackson led the NFL in passing touchdowns. What does he do that makes him so difficult to stop? Well, there are multiple things that he does, man. He has the ability to move within the pocket. He runs with his eyes downfield because you'll see him move and slide in the pocket and deliver the ball downfield to a Hollywood Brown or a Mark Andrews, or you'll see him extend the play and throw it back across his body to a tight end who has turned his route as, you know, the QB scramble drill, go into effect. And it results in big plays. And these are the things that, you know, you can't really account for. That's what happened against the Texans, right? D. DeAndre Hopkins, one of his big catches came when he slammed on the brakes and reversed field as Deshaun Watson, moved to get open and extend the play. These are not things you could account for. So that's something that could present an issue, and Lamar Jackson loves to go to the tight ends. Mark Andrews running that seam route is a serious problem. Running that deep over, because they like to have Hollywood Brown go ahead and run a clear out, and then they have Mark Andrews run a deep crosser, and then once he crosses over that hash mark on the opposite side of the field, they tend to hit him, and he catches it and turns up field, and it's big things for the offense. So I think when you look at this passing game, it is complete. Although Lamar Jackson didn't pass for 4,500 yards, it's still a constant threat. And the other thing with him that's really interesting is he has the ability to utilize different launch points to get the ball out even when things are muddy, right? If he's in a muddy pocket, if it's congested in there, there's a lot of traffic, he has a way of finding the opportunity to get the ball through all of that. That's a huge thing that you have to be able to do as a quarterback, especially against teams who are looking to just suffocate you and close things down. And that's what you'll see from this Ravens offense, right? That's what the Titans are going to look to do against them. It is going to be a huge task. Obviously, it's something that, a challenge that you welcome, right? Because being in the divisional playoff round, you're not going against a team that isn't a big-time challenge. So it's an opportunity. I'm looking forward to watching how they're able to work this out. But I think this is key for them, right? Linebackers, safeties, those are huge parts of it. And then just when you look at Lamar Jackson, in addition to as a passer, there are things that you have to do with him against the run, right? Either way, setting the edge is huge. So what can you do when you're setting the edge? Like, how can you set the edge? You need to make sure that you're not trying to play hero football, because as soon as you do, try to extend yourself to make a play and get yourself, out of position, that's when those big plays happen. And the next thing you know, whether it be Lamar Jackson or Mark Ingram or somebody converting a play that should have been a minimal gain into a long touchdown. You have to be careful. Also, generating turnovers are important. Like I said, 6-1 interception to touchdown ratio, touchdown to interception ratio, you're not really likely to pick off Lamar Jackson. But as he is a ball carrier, you will have opportunities to punch the ball out. That's why you're seeing the Titans, if you watch some of my videos on Instagram, Twitter, you're seeing them work on punching the ball out from the ball carrier, because that's a way that they could go ahead and make plays. So Lamar Jackson as a runner is something to look at. I wanted to get Dean Pease to talk a little bit about that. So here's Dean Pease discussing Lamar Jackson and his dynamic playmaking ability as a runner.
Oh, I think you're going to always compare him to Vic and Tyrod Taylor and guys like that, but I think he's kind of in a class by himself, to be honest with you. I think running-wise, he's a phenomenal runner. He's a different type of runner than Watson and all those guys. He could be a tailback for somebody. And maybe those other guys could be too. I see just a lot more moves and just really spins and things that he does that Michael Vick could do some of those things. But he's just a phenomenal player.
So that's Dean Pease. If you notice, he said he could be a tailback. I don't want this to cause some type of huge issue. He's not saying he should be a tailback. All he's saying is because of how good he is running the football, if he wanted to be a running back, he could be a running back. It's a compliment, not talking down on him. He fully believes that Lamar Jackson is a valid passer. They're going to have to watch out for that. But in addition to Lamar Jackson as a playmaker, we have to talk about the running game, right? And I'm not talking about Lamar running it. I'm talking about the guys he has to hand the ball off to. Mark Ingram has a calf issue. I don't know if you saw that calf injury, but it looked pretty dangerous. And it was something that happened. It was a non-contact injury. Those injuries could be a little bit more difficult to come back from, especially in a short period of time. He tried to walk on that after he got that injury, and he fell right back to the ground. So I don't know what's going to happen. That was 3 weeks ago. Ingram has been on the practice report as a did not participate due to that calf injury. I don't know, man. But I will say this. Five guys averaged 5 yards or more between the tackle. Two of those guys were Ravens. And actually, Ingram, even though he was a 1,000-yard rusher, he averaged 5.1 yards per carry between the tackles. Gus Edwards is someone that you have to look at. He was a 700-yard rusher. He has 69 fewer attempts than Ingram, but, and we're talking about between the tackles, but he averaged 5.3. Long story short, these guys could bang it between the tackles. So that's something that you have to watch out for. And I think when you look at this team, they are complete as an offense. I mean, there really isn't any other way to put it. And why are they able to do these things that they are able to do with the running game? What did I say? They are complete. That offensive line, right, when you talk about Orlando Brown, when you talk about Marshall Yanda, who has consistently been one of the top players in this league as far as the offensive line is concerned, and Ronnie Stanley, I mean, they are legit people movers, right? And you talk about Roger Saffold and Taylor Lewan, you know, like they joked with me about being bouncers and escorting people out the club. That's what these guys do. I actually wanted to bring up what Mike Vrabel said because he was very complimentary of that offensive line. Let's go ahead and hear what he said about them reestablishing the line of scrimmage.
Well, there's not much penetrate. You know what I mean? They cover guys up. They make sure that they do a great job of making sure that there's no penetration. When you read it out of the pistol, it takes a second longer or half a second longer, whatever it is. And they're not giving up any penetration. They're not, you know, there's a guy that they're reading, and that's the quarterback's job. But you know, there's not a whole lot of penetration on the backside. If people are trying to create a new line of scrimmage or jam someone underneath, they've done a great job of picking that up. Stanley's turned into a phenomenal left tackle. Great mover, very good length. Rarely get around him. Obviously, you know, Orlando's a massive mover. Much was made out of him coming out, but he's turned into a people mover on the right side. He covers you up, and you know, he'll knock guys 10 yards off the ball.
So that's it. You can't allow the offensive line to dominate. You know, that's the bottom line. They're going to look to do that. You cannot allow them to, because it starts with the way they control things in the trenches, and then it just extends out to what they're able to do. This is a team that matches another team's physicality. They usually outdo them in that category, as well as speed. Justice Hill is a guy that could come in and do some things too. You know, they have DeAnthony Thomas on the roster. This is a team that has a lot to offer. But end of the day, I think what Dean P said about doing your job and just sticking to that is the key. Let me actually reiterate that so you can hear Dean Pease's words for him for yourself.
You know, you just really got to focus and eyes and assignment. You know, everybody's got an assignment to do, and it's like option football back in college, and you got to do your job. If you try to do somebody else's job, usually that's a bad sign. And the other thing is, if you take your eyes off of things that you're supposed to be keying, generally that's not going to be a good sign either. If you got to try to hurry up and react to something they've done, and you didn't really get the key, that's hard. And especially the better the athlete, the harder it is. I mean, he's hard enough to tackle, even if we know where he is and where he's going to be. I've seen guys having defended absolutely perfect, and he makes them miss. I mean, that's just athlete on athlete, and he did a better job than the guy trying to tackle him. But the biggest thing is you got to have good eyes, and you got to really be assignment conscious, know what your assignment is, and do your job, not somebody else's.
So that was Dean Pease. Look, man, there's nothing else to say except for tell you to subscribe to this podcast, man, and get that 5-star rating. iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcast, search Talking with TD. That's for you and me. We'll be right back. Cutting to a commercial.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byer, and I'm talking with TD.
Always love to bring that hard school hip-hop, you know what I mean, that hard-hitting old-school hip-hop, you know what I'm saying? And we are back from the break. That's the group home, Superstar. Special request by one of the homies in the Titans fan group. Had to get that one for you, brother. There you go. Calvin's Corner. We are back on Calvin's Corner. Been a while. Had to kind of get out my car and look around and make sure I'm on the right corner because it's been too long, but here we are.
Google Maps got you in the right place to run. Well, I feel like the first thing I have to address in Calvin's Corner, because I have three things I really want to hit on. Two are about the Ravens, and one is about the Patriots game. And something that really perplexed me about Bill Belichick in the game. You know, leading up to the game, every time you play the Patriots, every time someone talks about Belichick, you talk about how on defense, he's going to make every effort, and he's usually successfully going to take away what you do best.
Mm-hmm.
And so, naturally, we thought that Derrick Henry would be facing a lot of loaded boxes, right? Like, Bill Belichick would put Gilmore on A.J. Brown and then would load the box, stop Henry, and make someone like Anthony Firkser, Michael Pruitt, Jonnu Smith beat you. It ended up being Anthony Firkser on a couple plays. But what's so interesting is in the first half of that game, when the Titans scored their 14 offensive points, the Patriots only had a stacked box 15% of the time. That is one of the lowest marks against Derrick Henry this season. In the regular season, Derrick Henry faced a stacked box on an average of 35% of the snaps he ran the ball. That was so, I think of the word for it, weird, off-brand for Belichick for me. Because I thought it was almost a guarantee. Like, Belichick was going to zero in on Henry. If you're going to beat me, it's not going to be the guy everybody knows about. It's not going to be the guy who went for 99 yards against the Jags. But
guess who it was?
But guess what scored and really moved the ball for the Titans? Derrick Henry. So I try to think about why Belichick did that. And I think his logic was, if Henry's the only guy to beat me, then I'm okay with that. Because he did a pretty good job of not allowing Tannehill to hit the big pass.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, A.J. Brown didn't have a big play. Corey Davis didn't have a big play. It was Firkser on a short touchdown pass and Firkser on a third down conversion.
Those just happened.
That's really the passing game from the Titans. So if that was Belichick's goal, he did it. But I think he kind of let Henry eat a little bit, and then Henry did the rest.
Yeah, and you could tell to your point about not having eight in the box because you saw a lot of two safeties, right? Yeah,
a ton. Every time I looked at the screen, I thought, how many times are they going to do that?
Right.
And how many times are they going to leave all that space behind the linebackers they left? One middle linebacker.
When are you going to drop somebody down in the box to play along with them? I tell you a couple of interesting things, and this is from Next Gen in combination with ESPN Stats and Info. Rushing against eight in the box. Derrick Henry is first in the NFL with 12 touchdowns against eight in the box. He's first in the NFL with 15 carries of 10 yards or more. And he's first in the NFL. He has half a man, 571 yards against eight man boxes.
Well, he's facing him on over a third of the snaps he runs the ball. There are only five players in the NFL facing stacked boxes more than him. I tell you what, wouldn't the Patriots have liked to have had him on their goal line run?
Boy, I don't know. Alabama on Alabama. Yep. I don't know if Evans is winning that one.
So the other thing I wanted to get to is looking forward to this Ravens team. And you did your breakdown on Twitter that had a really good response about sealing off those edges for the Titans and how they can do that and how would they play with their outside linebackers and use to set that edge to kind of take that away from the Baltimore Ravens' potent rushing attack. And so I wanted to go look at where the Ravens do their most damage in running the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So where they run to the most is around the tackles and guards. Between the tackles and guards, that's where they just run their most of their run plays. But they're the most successful on the outside.
Really?
They average over 7 yards per attempt off the left end.
I think a lot of that's Lamar, though.
And I was able to filter out passing
always
plays that turned into scramble. I was able to filter out passing plays that turned into scrambles by Lamar. So those are all designed running plays. But yes, like you talk about with that zone read, when they're able to get that edge, they make you pay for it. And I think what you can glean from what I said about the rushing attempts earlier is that they don't want to hit you with runs off the ends all the time. They want to hit you inside a little bit, and they're incredibly successful doing so, over 5 yards per carry, over 6 yards per carry in those gaps. But they bait you in with that because they're successful up there, and they'll get you down. But then when they want to hit you with the big play, the places they're most successful to are off the right end and off the left end. And you know, you can have that strategy going in, right? Like you did in your breakdown, mm-hmm. where you've got to stay disciplined and seal off that edge. But if you hit them inside a couple times and they're going to do it for 5-6 yards a pop,
yeah,
then you might take that step in because you want to go make the play. And then Lamar pulls it back and runs for 7, 8, 50, whatever Lamar Jackson can do. And that's what's so dangerous about him.
And that's that hero ball you got to stay away from happening. Because a lot of times you have a DN or outside linebacker that likes to crash down and stop that dive and get that tackle for a loss. But as soon as you do, he pulls it and he's...
And it only takes one against someone like Lamar.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And that's why it's so important. I think that's where a guy like Jeffrey Simmons, a guy like Daquan Jones, they come in, especially Daquan, because he's the one primarily that you're going to ask the two gap.
And then the other thing I want to talk about, this one relates pretty specifically to Lamar Jackson and something, you know, I don't think he gets enough credit for. Because obviously everybody talks about him as a dual threat quarterback and how elusive he is and all this stuff about his fantastic athletic ability. But Lamar Jackson has a higher average depth of target, meaning he throws the ball further down the field on average than Patrick Mahomes.
Mm.
He's got, so basically he's ninth in the NFL in average depth of target behind Aaron Rodgers directly.
Hmm.
So more than Pat Mahomes, one spot behind Aaron Rodgers. This guy is going to be able to stretch the field, which is another element to their offense that's absolutely potent. He completes the ball at about the same rate as Patrick Mahomes too, despite throwing a little bit further downfield than him, which makes it even more impressive. And we talk about with those tight ends that he can hit. I mean, it takes guts to throw down the seam, right?
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, that's where the most interceptions happen in the league.
Mm-hmm.
He's a gutsy player. He can throw the ball down the field. It's just another way these guys can attack you from all different angles and why Lamar Jackson is the MVP this year.
There's no disputing he's the MVP. That's awesome stuff, man. I like that. Look, Calvin's corner came back.
It's been like a month. I had to bring it.
Yeah, he brought it. I like that.
And I think really like the glue piece to everything with the Ravens working and what you were most unsure of with them was their ability to throw the ball down the field with Lamar like he is. Because coming in, you know, obviously we knew he was a fantastic playmaker, but people were concerned about his downfield accuracy or stuff like that. He had a strong arm coming out, but you were worried about if he could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he can, and they can do literally everything, and they're the best offense in the league because of how they can hit you in every single way, and they can afford to take this margin where they're going to run between the right guard, run between the left tackle, and then, you know, maybe gain 4, 5, 6 yards because of how they can open everything up and just blow their margin out of the water with big plays to Mark Andrews or Lamar Jackson doing something or hitting Hollywood Brown, who they're using in a perfect role.
Yeah. That guy has 7 touchdowns.
I know.
7, almost 1,000. I think it's like 800 yards or so. But, oh, man.
They make it all work and come together so well. Like, they're efficient running. They're efficient passing. The glue piece is obviously Lamar Jackson because he's so involved in everything they can do. He can do anything at one time.
You know, it's like for the sake of continuing to see awesome football, I don't want Greg Roman to get a head coaching job anywhere because I absolutely love. And, you know, the thing that's crazy is he found success in his offense, obviously with Kaepernick, but that Bills team they made it to the playoffs with that. You know, so it's just fun watching it, man. It's fun seeing it all develop.
So I think those are the three things I brought to the table today. One, Belichick deciding not to stack the box against Henry. Henry made him pay. And then in the second half, I forgot to mention this, Belichick did stack the box. Henry closed the game facing a stacked box 25% of the time. But at the beginning of the game, Belichick's plan was not to load up that box and to really make sure the Titans didn't hit a downfield play. Henry just provided it in an incredibly methodical manner, just like the Titans want to do in every game they go into. And then the other two things, of course, the Ravens incredibly successful off the edges, but they don't do it very often. They set it up, pounding it up the middle because they're so efficient, throwing the ball down the field and doing it off the edges.
Everything you want, they're able to do.
Perfect. I couldn't draw something up better.
I don't think Jesus could. On that note, we are going to a break. We'll come back and wrap this thing up. Talking with TD, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, 5 stars. Do what you know you need to do.
This is Jayon Brown, and you're now talking with TD.
Hey, yo, we light a candle. Run laps around the English Channel.
Yeah. Bringing that old school heat. That's Nori, Super Thug. We're back. I think when you look at this game, there are a lot of ties between these two organizations, right? You have a guy like Kamale Correa who played on the Ravens. You got Dean Pease, who was a DC there. Over there in Baltimore, you have Aronis Grassu, who's had a cup of tea with this team. You have Brendan Trawick, who was with this team. You have just a similar philosophy. There are a lot of things going on. I wanted to make sure we went back to Dean Pease for a second because I thought it was interesting. Teresa Walker, the Hall of Fame Tennessee sports writer, had an awesome question and got a great answer from Dean Pease in regards to going against his former team. Check out what Coach Pease had to say.
It's focused on Baltimore. I will say this, that I mean, I had 8 great years there. This is not, you know, when I left there retired. I didn't leave there because I had to or because I wanted to. I left there just really because I was retired and was leaving. And so I have the utmost respect for them. John and I still talk. Coach Harbaugh and I talk, not this week, but, I mean, we correspond. A lot of the guys on the staff, a lot of the defensive staff is almost the exact same as when I was there. So a lot of friends, but it's like you always say, if you go out and play golf, I'd rather beat my brother at golf than I would somebody I don't know. So it'll be, you know, we'll all be keyed up for it and, you know, want to get after them. But at the same time, when it's over, you know, those people are still my friends.
There you have it. Dean Pease, he said he would rather beat his brother in golf than someone he didn't know. Well, I tell you what, he has someone he knows in the crosshairs this week. And I just think it's, you know, that's just another fun angle to look at with this game. You guys heard or saw my breakdown when I looked at Dean Pease in 2012. Going against Greg Roman, obviously Pease was a DC with the Ravens. And with the 49ers, you had Greg Roman. And it was a pretty cool game in which, you know, obviously different packages as far as or personnel and on both sides of the ball, but they made it work. And I think it's going to be tough working this week, but it extends beyond the defense, right? Special teams. This Ravens team has the best kicker in football. Justin Tucker, I don't think there should be a conversation. I tell you what, I actually drafted him high. I was the first person to draft a kicker in all 3 of my fantasy teams. By the way, I won a championship in 2 of those 3. I'm just tooting my own horn. Undeniably, and I'm not embarrassed to do it. But one of the things I thought was interesting, I read the transcript from assistant special teams coach Randy Brown, and he talked about some of the difficulties that opposing kickers have when they come into M&T Bank Stadium. And the thing that you have to remember, there were some changes, or not even remember, maybe realize, there were some changes that were made to that stadium. At one point, there were open areas where the wind could come in and just kind of flow through it. But now it's closed, right? So it's a little bit different as far as how the wind comes in and it managed to find a way to whip around and, you know, change things. So the assistant coach, Randy Brown, as I look for the quote here, he had some interesting things to say just as far as you know, how sometimes the opposing kicker comes in and he gets a little confused when he says it or sees it. So here's the question. My guy Aaron Kasnitz from Penn Live, he's the Ravens reporter for them. We were in Philly together. But he asked the question about M&T Bank Stadium being the toughest to kick in. And what Coach Brown says is when they put the big scoreboards up, it kind of changed the wind directions a little bit. And going to natural grass. Because remember, when we first got here 12 years ago, we had a turf field and these 4 big, we'll call them holes or openings back then. So when they've reconfigured it a little bit, it's made it harder. But Justin Tucker has kicked very well there. It's hard for opponents. Opponent kickers come in and their heads are spinning in pregame. So it's good for us. You don't see many 50-yarders. Remember, we used to beat Pittsburgh. For all those years, nobody tried 50-yarders at Heinz Field. How about opponents trying 50-yarders in our place? They don't do it much anymore. So that says it right there, right? That says, and go figure, Justin Tucker hit a 50-yarder. That one was in Baltimore, I want to say. Hit a 50-yarder to win the game. So they have an advantage there. Greg Joseph, get out there early, attempt your kicks, and get used to as possible to that wind as you can. But that whole special teams unit, you know, from Justin Tucker to Sam Cook, Morgan Cox, those guys, they call themselves the Wolfpack, by the way. They've been together for quite some time, and they have a lot of money invested in them, and the results show. The Titans have their own solid special teams version, right? I think Brett Kern is the best punter in the league, first-team All-Pro. It's going to be very important for him to flip the field. That's going to be key, you know. So it's going to be a great game. I want to take a brief look back, you know, because it is Baltimore, and we always play a different song when it's time for this. But, Calvin, well, we got something special for them. Let them hear it. All right. We are going to Baltimore, so we have to pay homage to what you have down there, and that's that club music. That's a sample of the Baltimore club music. But let's bring in what we really do to get this segment started. You know what time it is. Blow the whistle. Yeah. That's more my groove. You know what I'm saying? Too short. Blow the whistle. This week, man, I'm the emperor. You got to get it, right? It's no fun when the rabbit got the gun, right? Isn't that how the saying goes? Well, the student schooled the teacher last week. Mike Vrabel being able to run an extra minute off the clock. Bill Belichick was over there livid. But guess what, Coach Belichick? You did that earlier in the year. Be careful what you do because somebody might turn around and do it to you. And that's what Coach Vrabel did. On that note, we're out of here. I have a bad feeling about this game, but we will see what happens. Either way, pray for rain so that way it'll slow the track down for the Ravens. Let's see what happens. I appreciate each of you. Calvin, my guy, is back. I'm so happy about that. We will continue to bring that hard-hitting content no matter what the score is, no matter what happens. I am Teron Davenport. You have just talked with TD. Thanks for tuning in. God bless. Good night.